Okay, good afternoon. We're going to call to order the Los Osos Groundwater Basin Management Committee. Start with a roll call, Dan.
Director Susanna?
Here.
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Reinicke?
Here.
Chair Zimmer?
Here.
Okay, all four parties present.
Okay, item three, Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, moving on to item four, board member comments. Do we have any board member comments?
None here.
And none here. No board member comments at this time. Okay. Item five, special presentation. We have two items on item 5A is a presentation for the recognition of Marshall Lahilski and his service. And we'll go ahead and start with that. I have a resolution here, number 2024-01. And this is a resolution to acknowledge Marshall and his service. The resolution recognizing and commending Marshall Lahilski for his exemplary public service to the Los Osos Basin Management Committee and the community of Los Osos. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Marshall Lahilski began his legal career by graduating from Santa Barbara College of Law and being admitted into the Santa Barbara Bar of California in 1977. He created Ohilski Law Group that same year, where he has done work in real estate, legal and environmental law, construction, and business law. In addition to his work at his law group, Marshall Ohilski taught as an assistant professor at our Cal Poly University from 1978 to 1983, after teaching Purdue University for several years before. And whereas Marshall Lahilski is currently serving a four-year term as the Los Osos Community Service District Board of Directors and the President for calendar year 2024. In his role, Marshall Lahilski, the leadership required for the district to deliver essential services to the community, which includes water, drainage services, parks and recreation, street lighting, and emergency services, and bridge communication between the community and other governmental organizations for Los Osos. And in fact, Marshall Lahilski helped to bolster the management and financial capabilities of the district to meet the challenges required to move the basin towards sustainability. And Marshall Lahilski is a member of the local agency formation commissions. He formed good relationships with the public by always being kind and approachable, as well as with his well-thought-out ideas and decisions. And whereas Marshall Lahilski serves on the executive committee and represents the Los Osos Community Service District on the Morro Bay National Estuary Program, he has served on this committee for the past 14 years, where he has assisted in overseeing and developing the important environmental protection programs for the Bay. And whereas Marshall Lahilski has served the board of the Los Osos Baywood Park Chamber and Commerce in multiple leadership roles. In these roles, he has helped facilitate the economic well-being of the community. And whereas Marshall Lahilski has served as the president of the SLO County Chapter of California Special Districts Association, where he furthered the association goals of providing the member with the necessary resource to improve their local community services. And whereas Marshall Lahilski was the original chairperson for the Basin Management Committee and held that role from 2015 to 2023. And in fact, Marshall Lahilski provided critical leadership and countless hours of input and work into the formational years of the BMC. And in fact, Marshall Lahilski worked ethic is so strong that in the 8 years of public service to the Basin Management Committee, he sent more emails after midnight than he did during the work hours of the day. In fact, Marshall Lahilski was instrumental in the development of the Basin Plan, including navigating the different interests among the parties while moving towards a solution. Now, therefore, it be resolved by the Basin Management Committee Board of Directors, Los Osos, State of California, that Marshall Ohilski be and hereby is commended for his 8 years of dedication to the Basin Management Committee's mission and is wished the best of health, happiness, and good fortune upon him as he retires from the Basin Management Committee and beyond. Congratulations, Marshall. You know, just personally, it was a pleasure working with you. I know we started the Basin Plan many years ago, back in the 2007, 8, 9 range. We were sitting around the table discussing how this was going to be formed and learned a lot from you in that time. And just your professionalism, dedication to Los Osos really ingrained in me and my years of service here in Los Osos. So I appreciate being a part of your professional career. Sure. Yeah, you certainly can.
Oh, do I have a 3-minute time limit?
No.
Well, one thing I wanted to thank you for, Mark, before I talk just briefly, was for pronouncing my name correctly. That's a very hard thing for people to learn, trust me. I always have to explain to them the C is silent, but I just wanted to say one thing briefly. You know, I'm dedicated to public service, but in order to be dedicated to public service, you have to have people that you're working with cooperatively, because it's not just one person that can do things. You know, I'm not a dictator, and a dictator couldn't even do anything. But like Mark said, when we first started the BMC, we were working together to come up with a solution that made the BMC productive for the entire community. So what I'd like to do is just thank everybody that I've been working with over the past 8 years on the BMC for their efforts. I mean, we go for all the various, we've had turnovers, obviously, but I just think it's very, very critical that everybody give themselves a pat on the back for all of the work that they've done. And they've helped me get to where I am. But thank you very, very much for the resolution.
Thank you, Mark.
If I might, Mr. Chairman, Marshall's been a pleasure working with you, and this is not over, right? Yeah, I mean, this is just one piece of so many things you do. You know, as the resolution indicated, your work with the estuary program, your work on LAFCO. I was proud to serve with you on LAFCO for a number of years. One of those little known but very important functions of local government. I had to smile when the resolution was phrased that you were serving a 4-year term. It sounded like a sentence, you know, which some days it feels like that, I think. But I want to thank you for your perseverance and your dedication to public service. I mean, local government is the most important form of government, and doing things at the community level is so important, and so appreciate your presence here. And again, no, you're not going away. So we'll look forward to continue to work on a whole bunch of different things that we do. You bet.
Okay. I think we need a motion to adopt this, right?
I'll move we adopt that resolution.
Oh, shoot. I'm sorry. Okay. Yes, we can do that. Let's go to public comment. Laura, you want to start in online? Oh, Jamie, I'm sorry. Jamie's dead.
If you ever have a comment and you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. If you're online, please raise your hand. We have no public comment in the boardroom. Oh, there's one in the boardroom.
Richard Margetson. Marshall, been involved with the district as long as I've been around. What I've always found unique about Marshall is he may have taken an initial stand on an issue or had an initial opinion, but he was always willing to listen, and he could be convinced that maybe there was another way. And I always found that unique in an elected official when it came to Marshall. Many times, finance, CSD meetings, water issues, fire department issues, Marshall would listen to the argument, and Marshall could be swayed if he thought the position was in his mind correct and the public's position was correct. Appreciate all your service for all these years. You've been very polite to the public. You've been very caring. You've been very receptive to public comment. And I wish all our public officials were like that. So thank you for your service.
Just a real quick one. Thank you, Marshall. I've always seen you as being kind and polite to everyone, and I appreciate that.
So I will move we adopt the resolution, assuming we have closed public comment.
Along with the second, I'll say thank you for making the after midnight communications text and not phone calls.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Roll call, Director Susana.
Yes.
Director Gibson.
Yes.
Director Reinecke.
Yes.
Chair Zimmer.
Yes.
All right. Resolution is adopted 4-0.
Okay. Moving on to special presentation 5B, the presentation from the county planning on the Los Osos growth rate implementation approach.
Good afternoon. My name is Claire Momberger. I'm a planner with the County of SLO Planning and Building Department here today for a presentation on the Los Osos Growth Rate Implementation Approach. I just want to start with some context on where we are at in the Los Osos Community Plan update process. A couple of milestones this year. The first being on June 13th, the California Coastal Commission provided suggested modifications to the county's local coastal plan amendment, which includes the community plan update. On October 5th of this year, the county will be hosting and facilitating a town hall for Los Osos. For more details on that, please check out our website and follow along at the next two LOCAC meetings or contact me directly. On October 24th, there is a Los Osos Community Advisory Council meeting, a LOCAC meeting at 6:30 p.m. And then on October 29th is when the County Board of Supervisors will have a hearing to consider the Coastal Commission's suggested modifications, the amendment to the Los Osos Community Plan, the Los Osos Growth Rate, and Los Osos Waitlist to Build, and not finally the Los Osos Habitat Conservation Plan implementation. And then in December of this year is when we tentatively expect the Coastal Commission to have a meeting to consider the County Board of Supervisors' action from October 29th. For today's presentation, I'll just be focusing on the approach to Los Osos growth rate and the wait list to build. If you would like more information on other elements going to the board on October 29th, today's probably not the best place, but the upcoming town hall and the LOCAC meetings will be the best place to get that information. To summarize the Coastal Commission's action on June 13th, we have some of the key policies and regulations here. The first being the residential growth rate cap of 1% for total residential dwelling units allowed per year. This includes accessory and affordable dwelling units. The second being a requirement for development to comply with the community-wide habitat conservation plan and incidental take permit. And the third being a requirement for development to be served by a sustainable wastewater treatment system, such as the Los Osos Community Sewer. Obviously, today we'll be focusing on the first policy here. This was Coastal Commission's direction, and then I'll going through our implementation of their direction, which happens in the county's growth management ordinance. So Title 26 of the county code is where growth rates are codified and where growth is discussed for the county. So the growth management ordinance, which I might slip into the acronym using GMO for the rest of the presentation. The GMO was established in 1990. It's an annual review by the board of the maximum growth rate for new dwelling units for each fiscal year after consideration of the most recent resource reports. The max number of dwelling units allowed each year is typically called the maximum allocation. But in the GMO is also where the provision for the Los Osos waitlist to build lives, and also where the 0% growth rate for vacant parcels in the prohibition zone is codified. And so with the annual review each year, county staff brings a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors, and they approve a resolution that includes the maximum number of units that could be allowed. So that is a public hearing process. So to get to the recommended amendments that staff is bringing to the board on October 29th, there are a few general procedure amendments. The first being that we propose the annual review be changed from a fiscal year basis to a calendar year basis, and then that the annual review is based on this language right here, the best available information and data. These two amendments really go hand in hand. Most times the resource reports that we have access to inform our growth rate recommendation are typically available in spring. Prime example is the Los Osos BMC annual reports. So switching to calendar year basis allows 4 to 6 months of review of the most recent groundwater information before evaluating growth for the community. And now we'll focus in on amendments being proposed to the GMO that are specific to Los Osos. First, that the growth rate that is specified is applicable within the Los Osos Urban Reserve Line, where a maximum residential growth rate of 1% includes accessory and affordable housing units is established, where the Los Osos waitlist to build will be used to determine priority of allocation within the community service area, where it's required that review of the best available groundwater monitoring data, and where annual coordination with the BMC is required. And lastly, there is an amendment we are proposing that clarifies and reinforces that an applicant must comply with our entire county planning framework and policy to request allocation. So that means they must comply with Title 23, the Coastal Zone Land Use Ordinance, Title 19, the Retrofit to Build Program, and the Los Osos Habitat Conservation Program. And one note here, the second bullet point speaks to how the 1% growth rate maximum includes accessory dwelling units. ADUs, accessory dwelling units, are still not legal in Los Osos, but this provision is made for when they might be legal in the future and to comply with Coastal Commission's direction. And now we'll get into the details of the growth rate. I failed to mention this earlier, but in 2020, when the community plan was tentatively approved by the County Board of Supervisors, there was also at that time a 1.3% growth rate that was tentatively approved. Since 2020, the BMC's annual reporting has shown an improving basin yield metric, and positively trending sustainable yield metric, even with the conservative methodology change to calculating sustainable yield in 2022. And then on June 13th at the Coastal Commission hearing, They, at the recommendation of the Coastal Commission's technical staff, concluded that a 1% growth rate would be appropriate for the community, different than our original proposal of a 1.3% growth rate. That direction from Coastal Commission is captured here in the first bullet point, where staff is recommending a growth rate that does not exceed 1% is based on the best available groundwater basin data. And further, the growth rate will be based on a 5-year rolling average of the basin yield metric. And at this time, I do want to just appreciate the BMC staff who and the water purveyors who coordinated with us on this approach of having a 5-year rolling average and using the best available data. So thank you again to the BMC staff. If we were to use the basin yield metric data from the past 3 years since the sustainable yield methodology was updated, that data would point to a 1% growth rate recommendation for calendar year 2025. However, the county wants staff is proposing that we get to use a 5-year data set, not just the past couple years. And so until we reach that 5-year data set in calendar year 2028, staff is recommending a starting growth rate of 0.4% for the community in calendar year 2025, a 0.6% growth rate in calendar year 2026, and a 0.8% growth rate in calendar year 2027. This is what the board will hear on October 29th. But it is good to keep in mind that the growth rate, the GMO review is annual. It's an annual review in a public process. So that concludes my presentation, and then staff's here for any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Claire. I appreciate the presentation. I will open it up to questions. Any questions before we go to public comment from the board?
I guess I was hoping for more information about wait list, but maybe that's a topic for another day. Okay. This is a lot of information for today.
Yeah. But, So the item on the 29th of October is going to be huge. Yeah. It's got a number of different things going on. The acceptance of the hopeful acceptance of the suggested modifications of the Coastal Commission, the modifications to the growth management ordinance, as Claire's outlining. And I've asked staff also to present the rules of procedure, shall we say, of dealing with how we deal with those that are on the wait list already.
I just know that's going to be the topic around town.
Sure.
Yeah. Everybody's going to want to know as soon as possible, just what that might mean. Okay. Yep. No hints even yet. Okay.
I think it's pretty straightforward. We've got a couple of options and we'll refine those and make sure that those will be the subject. Those will be available certainly for the town hall on the 5th of October. If we get them out sooner, we'll absolutely be happy to circulate them.
Thank you.
Yeah. I have one question about the exemptions and the accessory dwellings. You mentioned that they're not legal yet and that when they did become legal, they would be part of the 1% maximum, right? Does that also account? There's a couple other exemptions in there for affordable housing and some vested maps. Do you know, will that also, the 1% is the cap, right? These exemptions don't override the cap. Is that true?
Yeah, so in the GMO for countywide, accessory dwelling units and affordable housing units are exempt from growth. And the intent there is to create housing opportunities. But our 1% growth cap that includes accessory dwellings units and affordable units in the Los Osos Urban Reserve line is to comply with Coastal Commission's direction for our community plan.
Okay, yeah. That's kind of what I thought. I just wanted to make sure I was clear on that. All right, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mark. That was also my question. So I just want to clarify then. So where it says the affordable housing, even though it's listed under exemptions for Los Osos, that is not going to be a technical exemption where they can get around the Title 19 and the 1% growth rate.
Oh, correct. Yeah, they would have to comply with the whole framework, including Title 19 retrofit to build. And because we have that language in the Los Osos section for affordable units being subject to the 1%, they're going to be subject to the 1%, unlike the rest of the county. Does that help?
Yes, okay. That's helpful. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, if there's no other questions, we'll go to public comment at this time.
If you are in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. If you'd like to make public comment online, please raise your hand. We will take public comment in the boardroom first.
Hi, Marshall Ohilski. I just have a very, very brief comment. I was going to say exactly what Chuck said, and I know Bruce already responded to that, but the wait list criteria is really, really crucial for our community. Everybody that thinks they're on the wait list doesn't know where they are on the wait list or how it's going to be applied. So I think at that town hall, if you could have that available for people so they understand, it would be really, really helpful, because otherwise it's becoming a controversial issue because nobody knows the answers at this point.
In the absence of information.
Right, exactly.
There boils
That's how controversy starts, right? But anyways, I was just backing up what Chuck said.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Key component of the 29.
Exactly. All right, thank you very much.
Becky McFarland, and good afternoon again. I bring this up all the time. There's a glaring exemption to the growth management ordinance that I question the wisdom of. It's not counting guest houses as ADUs and not requiring them to be retrofitted, as well as home offices that could also have two bedrooms, a bathroom, and a wet bar that's easily converted into a little kitchen. So, you know, the county likes to say that this is the same as adding a bedroom, and I continue to disagree. Just the name guest house tells you what it is. It's a house. It's not a guest bedroom. If it was a bedroom, no big deal. So guest houses are not counted in this 1%. They're already being built, as many of you know. I don't know if most of you know how many are out there. I've seen at least six. I've heard as many as eight have gone up in the last couple of years. So that's like, you know, little, not even tiny homes, that there is no cap to the number that can be built. And that's in the Coastal Commission's report from June, says that there is no cap, and that's being put into the LCP. That's a glaring mess, I think, because they're going to be built all along. They're going to go in ahead of people on wait lists. They're not retrofitted. And there's no cap. That should concern everyone, especially the BMC. That's your water that you want to sell. And they're affecting the water. And if you've lived in Los Osos long enough, you know there's all kinds of interesting dwellings. but I did want to say, I recently met a man who said he'd constructed a guest house for his mother to live in. I said, I don't know. They're supposed to be used like that. He goes, oh, no. The head of planning told me you can use them the same as a granny unit. So is a granny unit an ADU? Is that going to be put in there? So he's, you know, and these are not bad people. You know, I understand. I have a disabled son. I'd love to have an ADU or a guest house for, but it's not right. It's impacting our water. And it needs to be changed. And I hope that all of you push for that. It should be part of the 1% growth. Thank you.
Super quick question. And that is on the calculation of the 1%.
Your name.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Sheila Dent. Is it a cumulative 1%, or is it based, like as they're doing these percentages, is it recalculated every year so that it's exponential to a degree, or is it on the base of a base year, and what is that base year?
Go ahead. I'll leave it to experts. But maybe we should get all the questions so we can do that.
Yeah.
We'll answer that. Yeah.
Good afternoon, Lindy Owen, Los Osos. I I agree with Chuck. I want to know about this list. It's been built up over the last 10 years or so. People that are on the top of that list may not be informed because they're out-of-towners. They may have no real idea what's going on. It's hard to keep up with things if you own a lot of property, I guess. So I think that needs to be clarified. There are people I've been told that are already getting their permits lined up, and they're at the bottom of the list. Are they going to get to jump to the top of the list because they're ready? That's criteria that needs to be examined. It's really a fairness factor. If not everybody on that list is informed and you can't communicate with them that it's opening up and they better get their mojo going here, if they want to build after all these years, they need to be informed. That's essential, I think. I'm also really upset that a spare bedroom gets to have a bathroom and a little kitchenette area and sometimes a garage. This is the guest house. They're not an extra bedroom. They're a separate building, and they can be used in many different ways than what a guest house was meant to be. A guest house does not live at your house all year round. And yet these are being used in that manner, and that's water that is coming out. Again, it's about our water. And I want to know, when you say that we're having a town hall meeting on the 5th of October, is this a real town hall meeting at the community center with a stage and a chance for the community to ask questions and instead of write questions? The last few meetings that the county's held with us have not been very effective. I mean, sitting little tables up and having people wander around and look at them, giving them free water, just wasn't very informative for a lot of people. And then I was also curious about so it looks like you said 2025, a 0.4% growth rate. Why would you not do the full 1%? Is that because you don't have 5 years of water data? You need two more to make the 5 year. So if you can explain some of that, it would help. So thank you.
Can you put up the slide with the 0.4, 0.6, 0.8? Richard Margetson. Calendar year 25. This isn't going to the Board of Supes until and then the Coastal Commission until the end of the year. So whatever that number equates to for 25, if the number isn't met that year, does that roll over into the next year? And then 0.6 the next year? And is a permit or is an allocation considered an allocation in that calendar year if it's just the permit being issued or final completion and sign off by county staff on final completion and occupancy? And then it's already been proven that there aren't going to be enough retrofit credits for all of the build out. And there won't be enough HCP credits. So what happens when we get to that point? Are those then just going to be thrown out? And then it's just a free-for-all? If it gets to 1%, then every year it's 1%, and they don't have to do anything related to either of those issues? I was hoping for more information in this presentation, but I'm sure we'll have more questions down the road.
There's no further public comment in the boardroom. We'll take online public comment. Jeff, all you have to do is unmute yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, board members. Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Edwards. And just a prefacing remark is that I believe any new development or change in use that requires additional water demand should retrofit. So now with regard to the discussion about Title 26, I wanted to discuss the exemptions under 2601034. And I did send Claire and others an email this morning regarding exempting new residential development and the conversion of commercial space to residential use in the central business district of downtown Los Osos and the business district of Baywood Park. This actually was included in a 2020 county action under LRP 2020-00006, which specifically discussed the conversion of commercial to residential. But I think in the interest of stimulating vibrancy and vitality in our commercial districts, we really want to encourage residential development. I would just point to our downtown currently in Los Osos. Some things have to change. It's not attractive at all and not functional. So exempting residential development in the two main commercial zones, I think, is important to the vibrancy of those areas. And so I would recommend a full exemption from Title 26. Then going to the allocations, by the way, I do support the rotating or moving average starting at 0.4 and ratcheting up. First question is, as we expand our safe yield and increase it from 2,380 acre feet, I would assume the calculation will be recalculated again, probably annually. We do expect to increase our safe yield over time. And then to the numbers, I think it's inappropriate to include accessory dwelling units and affordable units with the allocations for development outside of the community service area. I think all development within the service area should be under one umbrella, and all development outside of the sewer service area should be on another umbrella. And I would adjust the percentages accordingly. Just taking year one as an example, we have 26 units under the 0.4%. That 50% allocation for single family, including affordables that are single family, should be around 55%, 30% for RMF, including ADUs, when the Coastal Commission approves them sometime in the future, and then maybe 15% for that outside the sewer service area. And I would encourage a carryover for any unused areas into the higher demand areas. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, we have one more public comment online. Patrick, all you have to do is unmute yourself.
Thank you. This is Patrick McGibney. Claire, I'd like to ask, one thing is, when we talk about affordable housing not being exempt, are we talking about each housing unit or the project itself? So if you have a project that has 10 housing units, is that 10 units you're counting, or is it only one unit because of the project that has been applied? So if you could answer that, I'd appreciate it. I'd also like to know from either Mr. Gibson or anybody else on the board, what data is it, hard data, that you could show that we do have a sustainable water basin? I haven't quite been able to find that yet. So I would really appreciate, I think the community would also like to know, what data we're using to show that our basin now is sustainable. So if you could answer, I would sure appreciate it. Thank you.
There's no further public comment.
Okay, thank you. We'll bring it back to the board for discussion, board member discussion. Any?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if I might, let me take responses on a number of these issues, which are really policy issues, and I'll turn it to Claire, specifically on the one about affordable housing, multifamily versus single family, how that would be handled. But let me emphasize first, the handling of the wait list is yet to be finalized. And the questions of whether that means it's an opportunity to apply for a permit or it's the granting of a permit, all of that we need to spell out. And we have some We do have some history on that, as wait lists have been formed in other communities like Cambria and interaction with their CSD. So as to exactly how the wait list works, how it what it can conveys to the applicant and all that, we'll get that squared away. And I'll leave Claire to talk a little bit about how the growth management ordinance deals with affordable housing. As she indicated, though, it is not exempt of the 1% total growth rate. And to frame my comments, I think that I should point out that approach is consistent with an overall conservative approach to how we manage growth in the local coastal program and Title 26. There's a number of different layers about how we are being conservative about promoting future growth because of the sensitivity of the water supply. The retrofit to build ordinance under Title 19 is an example. This roll in of a maximum growth rate of 0.4, then 0.6, then 0.8, then 0.1 is another example of being conservative. The management objective of the basin of 80% is another conservative aspect, a 1% growth rate. All those things we understand very well. I will note just as an exercise, I went back and computed the basin yield metric based on the current 2380 safe yield. And if you recalculate the basin yield metrics of previous years, the five-year running average of the last 5 years is 80. It's actually 80.2. So that we're proposing to roll in, that would under one proposal argue for a 1% growth cap. But we understand that we're doing adaptive management here at the Basin Management Committee, and so a slow roll in at 0.4 is appropriate. As to the hard data on the water supply, that comes in the work of this committee, the annual report, actually the annual reports, and all of that was thoroughly vetted by the Coastal Commission and coming to the conclusion that we have an LCP that can move forward. The matter of commercial to residential is certainly a topic of interest. I'm not sure whether that's going to create an exemption. I think under the conservative approach to this, that probably won't be exempt, but that's a topic we can talk about. The question of the adequacy of retrofit credits or HCP credits, I think the HCP credits are not really constrained. It all depends on how much acreage we can secure for the mitigation of it. But the HCP was written with the ultimate build out of Los Osos in mind. And so at least the theory of the HCP is that those credits will be adequate. Yes, the retrofit credits, while we have many years of ability to retrofit and thus save water, though they will eventually go away. And at that point, we'll have to decide what we're going to do. It seems in a normal world that would eventually drop away. But the condition for doing that has got to be that there's an adequate safe yield that's being managed within the management objectives. And so I think there's a transition that's going to have to be accounted for there. The matter of the guest house as a bedroom, that's baked into our LCP. That's not in question. It is not considered adding water use. And I understand that people may disagree with that, and that's fine. The Coastal Commission did not cause us to change the nature of the LCP based on the guest house. And in terms of the town hall, it will be in the format of the previous town halls, where we will have a variety of stations available to get down into the details of that. And we'll also have a presentation and the opportunity for questions to be answered. Details of that are being worked out. So Claire, the one question was this matter of affordable housing. If they come as a a multi-unit development, have we decided what the proposal for handling the allocation of the wait list is?
Mm-hmm. So allocation requests under the GMO are based on the unit. So if an affordable housing project comes in with 10 units to be built, they would make a request per unit. So there would be 10 requests.
Okay. And that is then reviewed as part of the project approval in terms of whether that's going to be granted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And again, all of that's going to be spelled out when we get to the town hall and thus to the board item. So I think that covers what the range of what I heard in unless you have caught anything else that you'd like to comment on.
If I can, there was one question, I think, asking how the growth rate per year, like what does that mean? How does that translate to units? The 1% is 1% of existing dwelling units in the community. So right now, the environmental impact report that we have that's most recent for the community plan says there's 6,321 existing dwelling units. So the percentage of the new dwelling units would be the percentage of that 6,000 number.
Okay, thank you. Sure. Yeah, go ahead, Corey.
This is on. Okay. Corey Hahn, County's Long Range Division Planning Manager. Just want to add from a messaging standpoint, if the board takes action on October 29th and we accept the suggested mods and we go to the Coastal Commission, we do plan to, as part of the HDP implementation, with that rolling out, we plan to merge the wait lists with the HDP wait list so that we account for development holistically, right? So we're looking at water and habitat. And then as part of that is to have a communications correspondence with people on the wait list so that they can be informed that when the time comes, when their place in line comes, they can apply for permits, you know, so that it works in their schedule. Mm-hmm. And the goal really is to keep not just the community, but the wait list and any prospective builders informed of what's to come. And so the goal is to get them informed at least 6 months ahead of time before we have HDP credits so that they can make those adjustments, you know, get their application packages, whatever it is, ready and in time for submittal. And then based on how ready they are, we can then gauge and project how much credits we need for HDP credits and also gauge how much of allocations we need each year, right? So all of that's to come. We're going to share more of that at the town hall, but just know that we do have a plan to get the wait list involved in terms of like, hey, if your time's up, these are the things you need to submit. These are the things you need to be aware of so that people are ready.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Yeah.
Corey, I don't know who wants to address the rollover part, but that was, I did see provisions in there for even once the allocation's prescribed, there's a freezable, you can freeze that allocation. There's some provisions for that. So is that something that you have worked out yet? Does the county have this once allocations are provided, can they roll over? What is that stacking or how does that impact the development?
Yeah, for Los Osos, that's more like a policy discussion to happen in October also in other communities where the countywide growth rate, for instance, there is an ability to roll over like 10% of unused allocations, but that's because countywide we're never near meeting the maximum number of dwelling units allowed a year. That's not provided for in Los Osos with these current recommended amendments. So that will be a discussion in October.
Yeah. And I don't mean to put you on the spot if you're not ready.
I'm already on the spot.
We live on the spot.
Yeah. Just in these other areas where you have, is there an expiration once they roll over? You know, what comes to mind is somebody has an allocation, they secure it and they hold on to it for 10 years. I envision that some people on this wait list may not be ready to build at this time, but want to secure and lock up that allocation until a time maybe it's more financially feasible for them to develop or some other factor in their decision-making that I guess
let me
trying to get that framework of what does that look like? And, you know, because ultimately the concern here is there's a big hit on the basin all at one time, right? We don't want to see all of a sudden this stacking and then we're moving down and increasing our growth rate percentage and thinking everything's okay. And then a year comes along and we got a lot.
Absolutely. And, you know, to that point, Mr. Chairman, let me say that I've talked with county staff about there's the matter of offering an allocation. There's a matter of starting a permit process. There's a matter of approving the permit, and there's a matter of actually connecting the unit that's going to actually draw water. Mm-hmm. And we're absolutely committed to keeping the BMC informed of the spread of where things are in the process as we go forward. You know, I'll let Claire speak to the proposal as it sits right now and what issues we may, you know, to the extent that it's close enough on the matter of rollover. But from a policy perspective, my view is given the incredible length of time that folks have been sitting on this wait list waiting to move forward, if we release, you know, 13 or 25 or, you know, 50 or 60, however many permits are to be released in a year, I want to be sure that there's equity in ability to, for those who are ready to move forward, to actually use those allocations. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see a big bank of those sitting stuck. At the same time, you got to give people an opportunity to get through the permit process and the construction process. And so all of those things have timelines. And Claire, I don't know if you have anything to add for that, but that's the kind of discussion that as we get to October, we'll try to make sure that that's clear. Well, we will make sure that that's clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I can add to the number of dwelling units that's allowed in the projection year is based on the number of units that were actually built. So it won't be based on, you know, maybe last year, as an example, we allocated 26 units. It doesn't mean 26 units were built. And so when we go to project for the next year, that's going to be based on the existing number of units. So it could be 26 again. It could be 28. You know, it's based on the existing number of units in the community. It's not based on what was allocated for. And then two, I think, like, for anything that's discretionary that might go, would need to go to LOCAC for review. It would go through like the public process where, you know, the public and the BMC, you know, could keep track of the status of a permit as it's going through, jumping through the hoops to break ground.
Mm-hmm. In any case, it's going to be clear. We'll have clear rules set up.
So will this be ready by the town hall meeting or by the Board of Supervisors meeting? Because I think what I'm hearing is there's just a lot of questions from the public. Yeah. And this is an extremely sensitive and a big step for Los Osos. So sensitive to that, I think, you know, what I would almost, I don't know if the county's willing to do this, but allow the staff meeting to really weigh in on that wait list and what you're proposing and have some comments that we can bring from our constituents to the table to help have some input on that list as you're developing it. And maybe, you know, the framework start with what you've already done in the county and what fits into your, how you deal your business in the county. And then if there's some special circumstances that we can include in Los Osos, maybe at least hear those comments and get them out there.
Sure. If I may, Chair, sure. Just want to add a few things. One is that the ordinance right now, as proposed, has a separation of in the sewer service area versus allocation outside of sewer service area. In the sewer service area, the prohibition area as we know it today, that's where the wait list is, right? So that's the wait list will get a priority within that tranche of allocations. And then there will be, just so that we don't, because we, you know, properties outside of the sewer service area today can build. So we want to make sure that they also have a small reservation for them to be able to continue building. And in that also include ADUs and affordable housing so that we reserve that for that. And so it's not going to be free for all because we're going to have that separation. And on top of that, at the very end of the Los Osos section, there's also a language that indicates that they have to participate in the HDP and the credits have to be available. So to ensure that people don't sit on allocations that's where we want to make sure we merge the wait lists, the water allocation wait lists, the growth management allocation wait lists with the HCP wait lists, because we know that there's going to be a demand for those credits. So to make sure that we're not just allocating the growth management allocations to people and they sit on that, we also need to show that they have to demonstrate that they're going to have the will serves for water, will serves for wastewater, the HCP credits, and basically be lined up so that people aren't just banking that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the town hall, yes, we're going to basically right now the framework we have in place that's kind of the skeleton, so to speak, of how this will play out. We're going to have at the town hall more details on exactly how, if you were number 5 on the wait list, what does that mean for you? Mm-hmm. Right. And there will be different booths where you can ask those specific questions and have different, nuanced situations that you want to know more about.
Yeah. All right, thank you. Yeah, I think I see a percentage inside the prohibition zone of 75% versus 25% outside. So that's good to have.
That's correct.
And then the HCPs that you're securing today or working on, is that solely coming from the wait list that you have today? Or are you also taking input from others outside the prohibition zone or even outside the purveyor? We have to consider that too, that we also have outside of purveyor water service. Has there been any public outreach to secure those credits?
Are you speaking to the wait list for HCP?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's still being developed.
There's not a wait list.
Not yet.
HCP. No, but
correct. Right.
I guess let me clarify. I thought that we were securing some credits today, or at least getting an idea how many credits are out there or needed out there. And so are we only looking at the wait list for those needed credits, or are we going outside and including like outside the prohibition zone and outside purveyor service to try to secure? Because the question came up about limited HCPs or right. that being a restriction or something.
No, I think you're on track. I think what we're doing is staff is reaching out to Public Works, Parks and Recs, we are keeping track of the what we're calling the pipeline projects mm-hmm. are going through the minor use permit and conditional use permit, and then the wait list, and kind of gauge demand so that when we go before the board and ask for funding to implement the HCP, we can show that there is X demand and that the supply that of credits we're trying to achieve meets that demand, so that as much as possible, we want to make sure we're responsible of how we implement HCP. We don't want to overspend. But we also don't want to underspend where we don't have enough credits to meet that demand. So we're reaching out to various agencies to make sure that, hey, if Public Works needs something or Parks needs something or these projects are going through the minor use permits, or water purveyors, whoever it is that needs credits, we're getting input from them so that we can plan our funding strategy for the HCP accordingly.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Any other comments, questions?
Yeah, I just want to clarify. So when we're talking about dwelling units, so say, like you were saying, a 10 building or a 10 dwelling unit building was to go in, would that take up 10 spots on the wait list?
Sorry, Beth, I think I need a little bit more clarity in your question.
So the wait list is, I thought it was by a parcel or a plot. So if that's the case, so could you put in like a 10 or a 15 unit building and that would that take up 10 or 15 of the...
I see what you're saying. Thank you for clarifying. So the waitlist actually kind of operates as a proxy for an allocation request. So for properties that are in the residential multifamily zone that can have more than one unit on their property, they had to submit a request per unit to get on the wait list. So still per unit.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think the answer is yes. So it would have if it came up on the list, it would take its spot and then the next 10 as but well.
I guess what, let me see if I can paraphrase, make sure I understand it for one thing. So we have residential single family wait list. We have a residential multifamily wait list. Right. And within the residential multifamily wait list, to the extent there are multifamily units on there, they are saying we're a multifamily project that's going to have this many units. And this many units and this many units. And so when we set a growth rate, we're going to issue 1% projects. We break that into residential multifamily and residential single family, and we see how far down the wait list we can get with 1%. Good. You know, again, from a policy consideration, the development of affordable housing is a priority. And so we want to be sure that we shape that consistent with the resources available, but also consistent with equity for folks who've been on the single family wait list for a very long time. And, you know, so there's a number of moving pieces here, and that we're putting the final touches on that and be able to discuss that in more detail.
Okay. Thank you, Supervisor Gibson. Also going back, I know we're not talking about the wait list, but this is just my own curiosity. We have been getting calls from people in our area that want to know, you know, they're saying things like, I'm this number on the wait list. What do we do? Is it safe to tell them that their number on the wait list right now is not indicative of where they might actually fall in the development process? If we're having 25% of what used to be the area outside the prohibition zone, and then it sounds even like maybe new affordable housing might be coming up that could be included within the growth rate that is not currently on that wait list.
If I may, so their place in line is their place in line, right? But that may not be practically speaking, that may not be exactly where it'll be, because we're setting aside, as mentioned earlier, set aside a certain percentage for allocations within the sewer service area and certain percentage outside of that. So, you know, we're going to go in order of the wait list, but, you know, let's say someone, as let's say the first person on the wait list decides that, hey, I'm not ready to build. We may, you know, through our informing the wait list through that process, we're going to learn from people whether or not they are ready. And then we can, you know, we'll move to the next person in line. So, even if someone's fifth in line, if four people before them is not ready, they may become first in line. So it is their place in line, but it is not indicative of exactly when they will be up.
Okay, so it sounds like it might be safe to say it's somewhat in flux right now, and we probably shouldn't give any hard answers. Okay.
And or direct those questions to us.
Okay, yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Happy to do that.
That's always...
Yeah. And lastly, I just want to actually say thank you to the county. I think that providing this information, doing these outreach things that you're doing, it means so much to Los Osos, and it helps us, I think, as water purveyors also to help field these questions and give, you know, expert insight into what's actually going on here. Really appreciate it. And I just want to say thank you. Thank you for being here and preparing this.
I just want to say thank you as well, because to allow us to come here and speak, because if, you know, us reaching out to the BMC, to the public, is to help us, to inform us to make better policy decisions, right? There may be times when there are blind spots where we don't see, and we're going to hear from the public, we're going to hear from the BMC. And by hearing that, we can then bring to the board better policies that we can recommend. So, you know, this is a big part of the process. And, you know, we welcome, if there's any opportunity for us to, you know, come and get more input, whatever it is, let us know. We want to hear from you. And this is just a first draft at it. There may be changes between now and the board of supervisors meeting on October 29th, and we can make those, you know, those adjustments to make the policy that much better. So just thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree with that. I just, you know, your appreciation, just willingness to always answer our questions and certain things. It's been a journey going up to this point. You know, with that, we kind of mentioned there's a few moving parts here, and we talked about the staff discussing, you know, be prior to the town hall meeting and the wait list, you know, just, it seems like there's a lot of variabilities that was the prime focus here, but there's other questions that may come up. And so just wondering if, you know, before that town hall meeting, since this is such a big topic, big change, so many questions, if we could bring it back, you know, have the staff meeting and maybe bring this type of a discussion back to our BMC meeting before the October Board of Supervisor meeting. It just, you know, I think it's going to make the Board of Supervisors meeting better and more productive. And you may get a lot of redundant questions that may be dissolved here at this level where we can, you know, just eliminate that at the Board of Supervisor level. So I don't know if that's something that we could entertain. And then another part of it, we talk about the stacking and the long-term just tracking of this. If there could be some development of a tracking mechanism at, you know, developed at the staff level, like how do we come back and even maybe at these meetings on a monthly basis, you know, we reported on the connections of the wastewater facility. Maybe it's, you know, how many applicants have been approved, how many allocations have, you know, as we go through that step process, where are we and what are we looking at, you know, we'll serve letters out there by the purveyor, such things like that mm-hmm. I think would be helpful in this group here for us just to track our water use and what we can expect in the future.
Yeah, as mentioned earlier, we our goal as staff is to project out, right? So as part of that is to have a good tracking system. And so as we track it for allocations and the HTP credits, we're happy to share that data with the water purveyors and the BMC, mm-hmm. if that would help, you know, you all inform your decisions and your actions. And we're also happy to come back at the next meeting to answer any questions.
Okay, great. I was going to volunteer you to do that. Thanks. Corey and Claire and everybody else who's working on this are just great. And mm-hmm. I think it makes sense, especially as a September BMC has been bumped a little bit later. Maybe give a preview of the October 5th, which is a preview of October 29th. I think we'll work.
We're happy to come back.
Yeah. Yeah. And the more we talk about it, the more everybody will be comfortable with it.
Yep.
Okay. Sounds good. So do we need any kind of a motion to bring that back to the next board meeting? Nothing of that nature.
I'll just point. I think our ED is direction down here writing notes. So
all right.
Yeah, I think that's sufficient.
Okay. Sounds good. We're going to go ahead and close our special presentation 5B, move to the consent agenda. We have two items on consent agenda, 2024 financial reports and approval of minutes from the 2012 24 special BMC meeting.
Yeah, Executive Director here. Nothing really specific to present on those items, but happy to answer any questions that the board or public may have on consent agenda.
I have no questions. If there's no other questions from the board, we'll go ahead and open public comment.
If you have public comment and you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. If you're online, please raise your hand. We will take public comment in the boardroom first.
Ready? Becky McFarland again, and I appreciate this meeting also. You might notice that almost every chair in here is empty. I put out on Facebook on three different Facebook pages, and I put it out on Nextdoor last night, but the word isn't getting out to people. And I don't know if that's something, I've mentioned this before, put it on the amber sign coming in and out of town. Most people I talk to don't get a newspaper. They don't go on the websites. They don't get the information. And this is a huge issue. It's exciting for a lot of people. It's concerning for a lot of people. But we should be having as many people as possible at these meetings to get these questions asked and answered now than have, you know, the CSD meeting recently was full about MDO, but that's because it was put out on Facebook and people called people. Hey,
Becky, we're on the consent agenda and we have to stay on topic.
You should have gone. I thought
you were leading into that.
Okay, but. Well, I'll get a minute later. Okay, thank you, Mark.
Yeah.
There is no further public comment.
Okay, we'll bring it back to the board.
Move approval of consent.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Motion passes 4-0.
Okay, thank you. All right, now we're going to move to item 7, public comment on items not appearing on the agenda.
So should I just take 1 minute? I don't Go think ahead. I have 3 minutes.
We'll let you start over with 3 minutes.
Okay? Becky McFarland again. Yes, we need more meetings. And, you know, this meeting's at 1:30 in the afternoon. The Board of Supervisors meetings are during working people's, you know, their time to go. So if they're, I'm hoping that this will be presented again at the CSD and other places. I know there was something at LOCAC. I rewatched that meeting. I couldn't tell how many people actually heard that. So please, please, we need the information to get out there. I mean, if maybe the community center would let you put something on their sign too, or flyers or something to get people involved, because the more people know, and I know Chuck brought this up at a meeting, that the more transparency, the more people trust the government. And I got to say, you know, people aren't very trustful of all kinds of government these days. So let's be the most transparent ones. Let's do this right. And I didn't get my full question about the guest houses answered. I saw too that ADUs are going to be exempt from some of the from the public process when they get passed. So we've got all these possible houses, little houses being put up all over town. And again, the guest houses are not required to retrofit. The LCP will be amended this fall. That could be an amendment that the county puts in. We want a cap on the number. They should be counted in the 1% growth, and they should be retrofitted. And that's transparent. You know, there's no noticing of neighbors. So these things are popping up around town and people are like, how come they're getting to build? So really, that's an important thing for everyone in our town. And thank you.
Lindy Owen again. Could we get a calculation of how many retrofit credits might be remaining? Every house that has sold has had to be completely retrofitted. Every house that has got hooked up to the sewer has had to be completely retrofitted. People outside the PZ, prohibition zone, haven't had to do much of anything unless that applied to them when they sell their place. So there's got to be some idea how many retrofit credits are left. That question that Richard asked is important. What happens when those retrofit credits are gone? Oh, well, we just don't have any way of it's one family uses all the water that a family uses rather than help offset. Sorry, I'm so nervous for some reason. The town hall meeting, Mr. Gibson, really needs to be put back into the higher level of community interface. These little booths, that's more of a presentation. It's not a town hall meeting. We don't have any way to hear what each person's information is. And so I've been kind of let down at the last meetings. I just went on last Wednesday to a senior needs meeting that was put on by an outside LA consultant through grant money. It was excellent. 40 people showed up. We were able to ask questions. We were really well informed when we left. That's what we need. It's been a long, long, long time since we've had a serious town hall. So I hope you will go that way. And I was urging that all the people on the wait list get notified immediately, and that the county get a contact person. So when they call the county, they don't get Joe Smo, who doesn't know anything but answers questions. You know, that's not helpful. We've been hearing a lot about people getting different answers. So I think that if we put that on a postcard that you mail to all these people to say, please, if you're interested in building, it's opening up, here's who you would talk to so you can get valid information. That would help a lot. So the Habitat Conservation Plan. Have you considered, rather than going out and trying to buy another piece of property, we have degraded property that's been rescued. I know it's still possible to switch some of that money that you're going to ask for new growth into doing some restoration and habitat repair versus just outright buying another piece of property with no money to take care of it. Maintenance has sort of been neglected on a lot of these properties. Thank you.
Thank you, Lindy.
We have no further public comment in the boardroom, so we'll take online comment. Jeff, all you have to do is unmute yourself.
Good afternoon again. My name is Jeff Edwards. And as most of you know, the LOCSD took action to conceptually approve a merger or consolidation with the S&T Mutual Water Company at their August 1st meeting. And the basis of the consolidation request on the part of S&T was that theirs is a single source of water, one groundwater well, which is becoming increasingly vulnerable due to rising nitrate levels. And I'm quoting, by the way, and water system maintenance requirements moving beyond what the company could both physically and financially manage in the long term. To fully look at alternatives available to solve these issues, S&T staff has developed a consolidation analysis, which presented three alternatives, which included the LOCSD, Golden State Water Company, and the county. However, in looking at the consolidation analysis prepared by S&T, which was presented both to the CSD board and their utility advisory subcommittee, there were a lot of questions, and many of those questions remain unanswered today. So my request is that because of the broad basin-wide management implications, I request that the BMC take up and consider fully this consolidation or merger request on the part of S&T. And in doing so, S&T can then upgrade or improve their analysis so that we can all understand what they're really asking for. Fundamentally, and I'll refer to the LOCAC write-up on this action. LOCAC applauds the decision by the CSD because the CSD is pursuing state water. Well, in fact, Golden State Water Company is also going to be a partner in that pursuit. Additionally, the LOCAC in their write-up references the SAFER program. And the SAFER program, it's a state program, which is really for the consolidation of small mutuals, which S&T is one. However, S&T is not a disadvantaged community, nor are any of their members. And they have failed, S&T has failed to explore much less costly alternatives, which includes a possible connection with Golden State. So instead of a multi-million-dollar project with the LOCSD, it could be a very inexpensive intertie with Golden State. So again, I would ask that the BMC schedule an agenda item and have your executive director prepare a staff report based on an updated and revised S&T consolidation proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
We have one more public comment online. Patrick, all you have to do is unmute yourself.
Thank you. And I agree with Becky McFarland that there's not a lot of transparency or trust between the county, BMC, and the community. Not many people in the community really feel that the push for sustainability that the county is pushing right now is accurate. Mr. Gibson, again, skirted the issue about what data is really being used. You know, if you remember the letter of April of 2022 that the Coastal Commission sent, they said they doubted there was adequate water for the current population right now in our basin. And also in the annual report that Mr. Gibson keeps referring to, it does state in there that the Department of Water Resources classifies our basin as in critical overdraft, not just overdraft, but critical overdraft. And I'd like to read something that is in our basin management plan that I think has been ignored quite a bit. It's on page 137. It's at the bottom of the page, and it continues over to page 138. And it says, and I quote, "While reporting on groundwater production by the purveyors is necessary, the Basin Management Committee and parties will face significant challenges to successful management of the basin without the collection of use of data from non-purveyors. In particular, with over 40% of the basin production based on estimates, the Basin Management Committee and parties may not be able to accurately predict or measure the effects of their actions to stop seawater intrusion by using the basin yield metric and other metrics. Because there is a substantial time lag between potential overextraction from the basin as calculated through the basin yield metric and measurements of actual impacts on the basin in the water level metric and chloride metric, any errors resulting from use of estimates rather than actual production figures may not be known for as long as 15 years when it will be too late to correct. It is vitally important for the basin yield metric to be as accurate as possible in order to ensure that the proper actions are being taken to stop seawater intrusion as early as possible. The failure of this basin plan to stop seawater intrusion would harm the public interest in use of the basin as a sustainable source of water for all the purposes, including residential, commercial, institutional, agricultural use," and that is the end of quote. I'd also like to point out that in the Coastal Commission's report that they did, they did say that the county is now using for their estimates the estimated sustainable yield of 2380 acre feet a year. And again, that is an estimated sustainable yield, not driven fact, but estimated. And the production rate of 1650 acre feet a year, another estimate and not driven fact. Almost half of the production from this basin
Patrick, your time's up. You're going to need to wrap it up pretty quick.
Thank you. Well, I'd just like to point out that, you know, please read page 137. Please don't be using the sustainable yield as your basis for finding out if our basin is sustainable or not. That is not correct. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's no further public comment.
And we'll bring it back to the board.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, there's a lot of commentary there, but I think there are two questions worth addressing. One of them is the amount of retrofit ability, the upside of retrofit that was studied in the Medalis report in the recent analysis of the Title 19 retrofit program. And Medalis identified about 118 acre feet of potential savings, which if you work through the 2-to-1 and the, for instance, the average use of a single family, that's about 400 single family residences that could possibly be permitted, I guess you'd say, possibly take advantage of the retrofit to build ordinance. And then the other question on the HCP was a question of purchase versus restoration of existing lands. And both are in part of the HCP. There will be restorations undertaken, but the in order to build up a supply of credits, we get those credits faster if we purchase land to be preserved. The restoration credits come, but you have to actually see the results of the restoration before we get the credits. So the focus in the near term is purchase, and there's some good targets for that. And we'll look forward to getting that, managing supply demand, feel like the Federal Reserve, you know, we got to tweak all the different dials of the system here, but we've got great staff working on it. So we'll have more to say about that.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? All right, we're gonna go ahead and close public comment at this time. We're gonna move to item 8, the Executive Director's Report. Turn it over to you, Dan.
Thank you, Chair Zimmer. Hopefully a relatively brief Executive Director's Report. Just wanna highlight a couple of items. For the BMC and the public's consideration and information. The public draft of the 2023 annual report was submitted to the court in June after being approved by the Basin Management Committee. So we've fulfilled our obligations with the court to prepare and submit that report. So always good to accomplish. I don't know if this is really a new update, but the schedule for the water recycling funding study and the transient model has been extended a bit. And so I think we announced that previously, but we're currently targeting fall for early results and then a draft of the study in Q1 of 2025. So, and then I did want to inform the BMC, you know, based on discussions that we've had with BMC staff and BMC party staff, is that the BMC is proposing transitioning the video recording hosting for these meetings from AGP SlowSpan to YouTube. This is primarily a cost savings measure. We, with the modern video hosting and other online platforms, there are basically free ways to host video these days, and actually some benefits to integration with the Streamline or the website platform that we use for the BMC. And that will also allow for the addition of some hopefully helpful additional features in the recordings, including full closed captioning of transcripts and hyperlinking to specific agenda items within the video. So if you're really looking for a specific piece of information or specific agenda item, and you can much more easily access that with these new recordings. So probably shouldn't notice a difference if you go to the BMC website to access recordings. They'll continue to be hyperlinked at the BMC meeting pages. And the update on the Basin Monitoring Program improvement is that the BMC party staff released an RFP for the hydrogeologic services to support the well modifications and received a proposal and has a recommendation for an award, which is a later agenda item. And that concludes my executive director's update. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Bring back to the board for questions before we go to public comment. Hearing none, we'll move to public comment.
If you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. If you're online, please raise your hand. We'll take public comment in the boardroom first.
Lindy Owen, I've been really happy with AGP. I like them because they're local, and I have no problem accessing their meetings. I would like to see the cost analysis. I mean, is YouTube free? The time that it takes you to put it on there versus AGP doing it is cost. So before you make that transition, I think the public, or I would like to at least see if AGP can compete. And this is money that we've already decided we could afford to spend. So it doesn't mean that you just go cheap because you can. If it's valid recording and documenting these meetings, I think we need to stick with them. Thank you.
Just Becky McFarland, just a quick one here. I noticed in the write-up about this meeting, it talked about on YouTube that things could be edited, and it was spoken of like taking things off the end, but isn't that a Brown Act thing that you'd have to make sure it's not, that it's just the thing? I like the idea of hyperlinks so that you can go and find those things. That sounds good. And then a question for Dan is, where are we at with the electromagnetic? I know we're supposed to hear a report. Is it October? Or because that might have some readings that affect some of the decisions that are being made. Thank you.
There's no further public comment in the boardroom, so we'll take online public comment. Jeff, all you have to do is unmute yourself.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I wanted to make a few comments in the context of the ED report. First of all, with regard to the water recycling study, I've expressed objections before, and frankly, I'm not optimistic about any actionable results from that study. So unfortunately, I think it's kind of a waste of time, but we'll, I guess, wait and see. In upcoming meetings, or with regard to upcoming meetings, I have asked that you agendize, and I'll ask again, agendize a discussion about the S&T merger with LOCSD. In addition to that, I'd ask that you would bring back agenda items that would, one, analyze the feasibility, preliminary feasibility of an inflatable dam at Los Osos Creek where the bridge is, to capture and detain stormwater that collects in Los Osos Creek during high and peak flows. In the context of climate change, this is something that is going to be, I think, a very important tool. It's low tech and low cost. And again, I would ask that it be brought back in terms of exploring the feasibility of that. And then lastly, we have a geographic information systems database now with regard to all the wells in town. And I think that sets the stage. And I would ask that agenda item be brought back by your executive director to implement a well abandonment program. I believe there are others that we might be able to borrow from or rely on in part. And so I would urge this board, as a basin management tool, to remove as many straws from the basin that are not being used or minimally used as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
There's no further public comment.
Okay. We'll bring it back to the board.
Yeah, I don't I don't like to sever a relationship with AGP just because I know them personally and they provide great service and have for years. But I think they would be the first to admit that technology is available that makes that possible to improve that service. So, yeah, I'm fine with that.
Did the district move over to YouTube, or are they still using, did they move over? You don't have to answer if you don't want to. I just thought, you know, if they're moving in that direction, is that something we're late?
Moving in that direction.
Oh, everybody. YouTube channel and it just costs. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
I do also have a question for you, Dan. So with the, in your director's report, you do mention the transient model and also the updates to the basin metrics. I'm just curious what the status is right now of the transient model, when we think it would be done, and if it is after that point that we intend to look at the basin metrics for updating the plan.
Yeah, so the update on the transient model is that the hydrogeologist team that's working on that model is working through the calibration process, which is, you know, obviously it's a critical component of, you know, developing a groundwater model for us to be able to utilize. So they've made some, you know, structural changes to the model based on our improved understanding of the basin, the aquifers, and then are recalibrating, basically running the model to get what the model predicts would happen over the history that we have groundwater monitoring data, and then comparing that to the physical measurements of what we actually observed in the basin over that same period of time. And, you know, and in that calibration effort, they're trying to get the model to as closely replicate what we have seen as observed conditions, so that when we ask the model to predict something in the future, it is best able to predict those future conditions. So we're in the calibration process now. That process can be challenging. As you can imagine, you're trying to get this very complex computational machine to simulate conditions within a very complex and heterogeneous, you know, environment. And so that process is, as I've seen in almost every groundwater modeling project I've been involved in, taking a bit longer than, you know, I think was originally anticipated. But I think optimistic that we're gonna get there. We're gonna get a calibrated model. We're gonna get a great project. It's just gonna take a little more time. With that model, and/or sort of even without the model, but I think the model would be a useful tool when looking at our metrics. We do want to reevaluate our metrics, and we'll talk about some of them later in the meeting, because we have poor data for some of the wells that are in our current metric, or some of the, I shouldn't say that. We have great data from the wells. Unfortunately, the wells are not giving us representative data for the parts of the aquifer that we're trying to observe because of their construction methodology or and just their age. And basically, there's leakage through the aquifer in that well. One of the wells, the Rosina well I'm referring to specifically. So I think at a staff level, are interested in updating the metrics. The BMC's hydrogeologist has actually even made an initial cut at how we could potentially update those metrics. But that initiative really has been on hold for a good reason. And that reason is we have made really significant progress towards improving our groundwater monitoring network over the last 3 years with the Farrell well modifications, the Skyline monitoring well installation. This year, we're looking to modify LA tape 14 and 16 to be dedicated zone E. And so the challenge has been we want to reevaluate the metrics, but we also want to incorporate all these new, better monitoring opportunities into that. And we don't want to necessarily do it and then redo it and then redo it. So, but at some point, we may just obviously need to make a decision that we would like to bring these new wells or modified wells into the metrics and just take that on. So that's hopefully a helpful description of the status.
Yes, thank you, Dan. So I want to make it clear that the reason I ask is because when we're looking currently at our chloride metric, we are using old data, correct, for the Rosina well. We aren't currently getting new data. So that's the biggest part of that question. And I'm also curious, one more question, when we would start to see data from the Skyline well, and how long after that would we want to incorporate it into our actual metric for chloride?
So we do have chloride data for Skyline. And we've got that in item 9A. It's a single data point, but I think we can start discussing when to consider modifying the metrics to include that data point at any point, really. So,
yeah, we'll talk more about that on our agenda item. Maybe go in a little deeper on that. Okay.
There was a question about the AEM survey. That's a great question. I think I'm on the notification list for when that data becomes available. I don't believe that I've seen anything, but it's definitely something we can look into. We're all interested in getting that data and seeing what it tells us. I would also add something, a preview, maybe a discussion for the calendar year 2025 budget, but there may be some other geophysics opportunities now and that are likely more readily available to the BMC because of the habitat conservation plan. We historically had been limited in our ability to do sort of on the ground geophysics analyses, which are much cheaper, but do, you know, require some impact. And so that's something we're excited about pursuing moving forward. And it's not in there, but Director Gibson referenced it. But we are also considering looking to and likely move the September meeting back a week just because of some room and support staff availability. For the normally scheduled date for the September BMC meeting.
Okay, we'll have to look at that date. I think that's also Labor Day. Is it, you said move it? Oh, back a week further out.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Okay. If there's no further discussion or comments, we'll go ahead and close the executive director's report. We move to item 9A, our spring 2024-23 Los Osos Basin Aquifer Water Quality Monitoring Results and Updated Chloride Metrics.
Thank you, Chair Zimmer. Always excited to be able to present the results of our biannual monitoring program. Definitely something I think of interest of all of us here at the BMC, as a reminder, we just talked about the model. The model is kind of our predictive tool. It's our tool that allows us to estimate the sustainable yield based on current conditions moving forward in the future. The metrics and the monitoring are physical observations of conditions within the basin. And really what we utilize to tell us whether or not the model is telling us what we think is happening. And so it's very helpful to have both data sets, and they really work together. And one of the drivers for the updating sustainable yield in 2021 was, kind of an observed disconnect between what the model was saying and what the metrics were saying. And I think, what we're seeing now is much better alignment between those. So just jumping into it. What we saw in the spring of 2024 was a slight decrease in both the water level metric and the chloride metric. So positive news for the chloride metric, not so positive news, but really not really news, I think, on the water level metric and the fact that it was a decline of 0.1 feet, which in an aggregate water level elevation of, I want to say 5 wells. Input from Cletharis geologists on the water level metric was that, 2023 was such a historic year for rainfall, and we saw a historic jump in the water level from 2022 for the spring, that, a slight correction and may not be unexpected. The chloride metric showed an improvement, slightly lower levels in a couple of the wells that make up the chloride metric, as was referred to by Director Reinecke. There is some data in the chloride metric that is not the best, or again, it's not that the data is bad, it's just that the well's bad. we did not have a representative, what we considered a representative sample from the Rosina well for the lower aquifer. The levels of nitrates were elevated in the samples that were taken in the time frame that we're looking to monitor, and that's an indicator of borehole leakage from the upper aquifer. So a previous sample value was substituted, the spring 2023 value, and we may need to substitute values in the fall. And this really highlights something that I think we've all known, is that the Rosina well, it's time to go. We have an opportunity to replace it with the Skyline well that we installed last year. So some good motivation to start talking about those basin metrics, as was requested. Some other news from the metric was that the Pasadena well, LA-11, showed the first ever spring-to-spring decline in chlorides. So that's positive news. That is something that we have been tracking very closely, the chloride concentrations in Pasadena. That's a well located in the northern west portion of the overland of portion of the basin, I guess, and was an area of concern of potential seawater intrusion occurring in there. And it's one that we've been watching and with some interest. I mean, we have been seeing an increase in chloride concentrations in that well, but we've also seen a pretty significant increase in water levels in that well. And I think if you recall, at a recent meeting, we showed a hydrograph that showed that that well potentially went artesian in 2023, meaning the water levels in the deeper aquifer were higher than the ground surface in that well in a recent year. And so we've been wondering how the chloride levels were going to respond to that increase in water levels. And we're starting to see potentially some evidence of that response. And so either a halting of the seawater intrusion at that location. The results, there's a question about the results from the Skyline wells. Those are included in the data table in the very back. They show seawater intrusion in zone E, but not in zone D, which is consistent with what we anticipated. So that's always good. It's nice when what you think is going to happen is what you observe when you punch a new hole in the basin. And so happy with those results. We did see an increase in the chloride concentrations in the Lupine Cuesta by the Sea well zone E. And so that's something that we will continue to monitor help try to manage. And but all in all, relatively good results, from our monitoring program. No major changes really in either of the metrics. And so we'll look forward to seeing what the fall results tell us. Any questions from the board on the metric update?
I do have a question that you may or may not know the answer to, Dan, but for that one result that I presume was taken in the spring and not used for the Rosina well, do you know if it was indicating a lower chloride level and that was what showed that we needed to not use it? Because it looks to me like the rest of the data is new across that line.
I do not know the direct answer to that question. What I do know is that typically the decision around whether or not to use that data point from Rosina is tied to the nitrate concentrations, not the chloride concentrations. If we feel that the nitrate concentrations are low enough, or I believe the threshold is 2.1 milligrams per liter, then we believe that that is a representative sample of the lower aquifer at that point and would then use that chloride concentration. So I think the decision to not use that data point is solely tied to the nitrate concentrations in that sample. If that helps answer the question.
I don't have anything to add to that. I don't know why that decision was made like that.
Yeah, with the Skyline well now in place, isn't it time for maybe Rosina to be phased out? We talked about, you mentioned it's time for that discussion. I don't know if it's today, but
Yeah, well, I definitely look for direction from the BMC on that. And yeah, we can start that update process. And like I said, we already have. And I think we are starting to see, and I think even Spencer's note to me that it's
why don't we go to public comment and then we'll have more of that discussion if there's no specific questions. We'll go ahead and open it to public comment.
If you're in the boardroom and you would like to make a public comment, please come up to the podium. If you are online, please raise your hand. We will take public comment in the boardroom first.
Lindy Owen, I guess I'm a little curious. I didn't really understand if you have nitrate, like the Rosina well with nitrates, so you decide to exclude the chloride levels, which sounded like they were high. And so the report is not really complete. Is this how we trend towards sustainability?
Thank you, Lindy.
There was no further public comment.
And online or in the board? Okay, thank you. All right, we'll bring it back to the board. So yeah, you know, we've talked about Rosina. It's kind of always been a tough decision whether we're getting an accurate representative sample of the chloride levels, right? That's the one that, and I see, you know, I'm looking at the levels right now, Beth, I see what you're saying, that some of the other numbers have changed, but not that one. And we had the same question to some degree, just trying to understand, is that the true sample that was taken? And I think, you know, one thing, no matter what the decision is on Rosina, if all the rest of the report is actual data collected in the field, then this number that's in this report should be data collected in the field. And then the footnote be the adjusted measure. So that I think somebody that doesn't understand the process would read this and think that it's all actual data. So maybe that's something we could do right out of the gates. And then we go to an adjusted and we can make that, whether we're using it or not using it, whether it's an adjusted number or not, be in the footnote. And then, you know, just over different thoughts on what's happening in Rosina. Is it that the lower portion of the aquifer is plugging? We know that as we use wells plug one grain at a time. Sometimes you get slugs. Over time, they're going to plug and they're going to change. So are we just not able to even pump from the lower aquifer or extract as much water from the lower aquifer as we once were? Therefore, we're seeing this higher concentration coming from the upper aquifer. A lot of different things you got to consider when you start looking at a well like this. I think at the end of the day, we agree it's not the best for what we're using it as a indicator of chloride. My reservation on it is changes. You know, we've been making decisions based using this data point. We're going to change it. And then how does that change impact? Willing to change it. Just want to throw that out there. I'm just always hesitant of change when I'm making decisions. So, but yeah, if we want to put that out with staff and take a look at that, and is it time to cut over? Do we still keep, you know, one of my original thoughts when we talked about it before is we still keep Rosina there. I mean, if it's not being included, then we still want to just know, are changes happening? I don't think the cost of that sampling is very much, but still having that as a reference point so we can go back and not forget about it if there is something that gives us a clue. The more information we have, the better.
It seems to me that this really motivates the discussion of updating the metrics. And I would point out that what we're trying to do is boil down the three-dimensional status of a complex physical system into one number here. That's a daunting task. And so in the transition, I mean, we're going to have, I mean, it's sad to think there's the well is served ably and is now to be retired. I hope we have a small ceremony at that well at a point when we get no offense to Marshall, but a resolution.
Wait, can I make a clarification? We're not going to retire the well. We're going to retire the well as a monitoring well.
So
just as clarification. Really
to put it, yeah, not put it out the but, pasture.
Just to follow that up, we do use that well as little bit as possible as a basin objective to not pump, but it is part of.
Well, our water you know, eventually, you know, in the bigger scheme of things, the way it go, you know, it's going to go away. But, you know, as we get to the annual reports, we'll also have the full spatial, to the extent we have data on a full spatial extent, to see what we imagine the seawater intrusion front to be. Recall that that's our criteria upon setting safe yield, is that we don't see movement of that front. So I think the transition to a new metric, which is helpful, and you know, I think it provides a piece of data that is useful, especially with the projections that we have here. But those projections need to be transitioned. The dashed lines on this chart need to be transitioned to the transient model. The transition to the right set of wells feeding into the metric, the double weighting of the one well, all those things. I would like to think that 2025 and maybe early in 25, we get that. A first use of the transient model is to square around the metric, so we have some greater sense of confidence in it.
Yeah. Yeah, a couple of things to add. Comment about boiling it down to one number. Yeah, that is, we try to do that to make it more accessible, but that also creates challenges because it is a diverse system. And as we talked about, it's dynamic. Things are changing in one direction in some areas.
In three directions.
Yeah, and other direction in other areas. To the question about the substituted value, I do have that data. So in the sample that was taken from Rosina in the fall that had elevated nitrates to the point that that was chosen to substitute it, the chloride concentrations in that sample were 160 milligrams per liter, as opposed to the 211 value that was included in the metric calculation. And there again, the reason for that is the 160, what would have been lower would have shown a lower decrease in the chloride metric, would have been good news. We don't believe that's representative because of the concentration in nitrate.
Dilution from them.
Yeah. And, you know, I agree with a lot of comments. If we never had to talk about borehole leakage at Rosina ever again, that would make me very happy. Yeah. So we will work with staff and look to try to bring forth information and proposals so how we can modify this so we can move forward and limit these discussions.
Yeah, thanks for that clarification, because I assumed it was lower, but I didn't know what that actual number was. So it's helpful to know that at least we're putting a more conservative number out there than what was actually taken in the sample. Okay.
Yes, thank you. And one follow-up to that, Dan. So I think using nitrate for that purpose in this well is kind of an interesting objective. One thing just off the top of my head that I'm looking at is the total dissolved solids, the TDS. You know, you can capture your chloride within that measurement as well. So I don't know if maybe overall we could look back and see if Spencer Harris could maybe either be here to answer some questions, or maybe we could get a little bit more of his thought process behind why he might be using the nitrate on really pretty small changes of, you know, 1.2 milligrams per liter for nitrate is relatively small. But when we're looking at TDS, you know, we're seeing jumps of over 200. So it's just it's something to consider, I think, as we move forward.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the decision around switching these values, I mean, it predates my time and predates a number of our directors' time. If Marshall were still here, he could maybe talk to us. But yeah, it looks like going back as far as 2017, values were substituted at Rosina because of concerns about this borehole leakage and the lack of representative data. So, I mean, what I can infer and believe is that, you know, certain things like TDS and chloride are sort of, there's concentrations of those in both the lower and upper aquifer, whereas generally, and obviously by no means the case, the concentrations, at least at this location in the lower aquifer for nitrates, are less than 2. And so anytime we see a value above 2, that's an indicator that it's seeing some influence from the upper aquifer. I mean, the comment about well abandonment and leakage between the aquifers, I don't want to go there, but something for consideration.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, we'll go ahead and close action item 9A and move to item 9B, hydrogeological services for well modifications to wells LA-14 and LA-16. And the consultant recommendations.
Thank you, Chair Zimmer. So yeah, happy to bring forth a consultant award recommendation for the hydrogeologic component of modifying wells LA-14 and 16 to be dedicated zone E monitoring wells. If you recall the BMC, we've been talking about these modifications for a number of years now. They come out of a technical memorandum that Cleith Harris geologist prepared, and I'm blanking on the date, a number of years ago, that really suggested what were the highest and best uses for the BMC's available funding to improve its monitoring program. And, you know, as described earlier, we've modified the Farrell well, we installed the Skyline well, we submitted a grant application to potentially install an additional new dedicated monitoring well, which I am interimly calling the Sweet Springs monitoring well, just to have a, you know, relatively common, well-known name for a well potentially located at the corner of 4th and Ramona, or 5th and Pismo, are the two potential sites for that well. But we won't know whether or not we get that grant funding till the end of the year, and so that'll be a discussion for the calendar year 2025 budget. But what we do have this year is we have BMC budgeted $70,000 for groundwater monitoring program improvements, with the potential for these two modifications to be those improvements. Additionally, the Los Osos Community Services District has entered into an additional cost sharing agreement with the National Estuary Program for an additional $75,000. So that gives us a total of $145,000 budgeted and available for groundwater monitoring improvements. I won't go into a lot of details, but it's basically these are two old production wells screened in multiple zones that we would sleeve, in essence, and put a smaller diameter casing inside and then seal off the other areas so that we could get dedicated water quality samples from the zone E, the lower portions of these wells. To help better understand seawater intrusion in those areas. And to do the design for those modifications, and really a lot of it's about overseeing the construction of those modifications, we need a hydrogeologist to support us. So we released an RFP requesting proposals to fulfill the procurement requirements of the National Estuary funding. We received one proposal from Cleith Harris geologists that for $25,000 to provide those services. That's within the budget that we had established for this project, of rough estimate of $105,000 total, with $25,000 for the design effort. And so based on that, staff recommends awarding this contract and moving this project forward. And just to help preview, the next steps would be, with the support of those services, to release a bid package to hire a driller to then actually do the work, with the goal of completing it before the end of the year.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. Bring it back for any questions before public comment. Seeing none, we'll move to public comment.
If you have a public comment and you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. And if you're online, please raise your hand. Click there are no public comments in the boardroom or online.
Okay, thank you. We'll bring it back to the board.
Move staff's recommendation.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion passes 4-0.
Okay, thank you. Move to our last item 10, adjournment.